Benedict reached out and patted her on the hand. He didn't know why. He hadn't planned to. But somehow it seemed the right thing to do. "Yes, well," she said, giving his hand a little squeeze before returning hers to her lap. "Was there any particular reason you asked about your father?"
"No," he lied. "At least not... well..."
She waited patiently, with that mildly expectant expression that made it impossible to keep one's feelings to oneself.
"What happens?" he asked,
as surprised by the words tumbling forth as she undoubtedly was. "When one falls in love with someone unsuitable."
"Someone unsuitable?" she repeated.
Benedict nodded painfully, immediately regretting his words. He should never have said anything to his mother. And yet, he sighed. His mother had always been a remarkably good listener. And truly, for all her annoying matchmaking ways, she was more qualified to give advice on matters of the heart than anyone he knew. When she spoke, she appeared to be choosing her words carefully.
"What do you mean by unsuitable?"
"Someone..." He stopped, paused. Someone like me probably shouldn't marry."
"Someone perhaps who is not of our social class?"
He glanced at a painting on the wall. "Someone like that."
"I see. Well..."
Violet's brows scrunched a bit. Then she said,
"I suppose it would depend on how far out of our social class this person is."
"Far?"
"A little bit far, or quite a lot far?"
Benedict was convinced that no man of his age and reputation had ever had such a conversation with his mother, but he nonetheless answered, "Quite a lot."
"I see. Well, I would have to say..."
She chewed on her lower lip for a moment before continuing.
"I would have to say,"
she said, slightly more forcefully, although not, if one was judging in absolute terms, forceful at all.
"I would have to say,"
she said for a third time,
"that I love you very much and will support you in all things."
She cleared her throat.
"If, indeed, we are talking about you."
It seemed useless to deny it, so Benedict just nodded. "But," Violet added,
"I would caution you to consider what you were doing. Love is, of course, the most important element in any union, but outside influences can put a strain on a marriage. And if you marry someone of, say,"
she cleared her throat,
"the servant class, then you will find yourself the subject of a great deal of gossip and no small amount of ostracism. And that will be difficult for one such as you to bear."
"One such as me?" he asked, bristling at her choice of words.
"You must know I mean no insult, but you and your brothers do lead charmed lives. You're handsome, intelligent, personable. Everyone likes you. I cannot tell you how happy that makes me."
She smiled, but it was a wistful, slightly sad smile.
"It is not easy to be a wallflower."
And suddenly, Benedict understood why his mother was always forcing him to dance with the girls like Penelope Featherington, the ones who stood at the fringes of the ballroom, the ones who always pretended they didn't actually want to dance. She had been a wallflower herself. It was difficult to imagine. His mother was hugely popular now, with an easy smile and piles of friends. And if Benedict had heard the story correctly, his father had been considered the catch of the season.
"Only you will be able to make this decision," Violet continued,
bringing Benedict's thoughts back to the here and now.
"And I'm afraid it won't be an easy one."
He stared out the window, his silence his agreement.
"But," she added, "should you decide to join your life with someone not of our class, I will, of course, support you in every possible manner."
Benedict looked up sharply. There were few women of the ton who would say the same to their sons.
"You are my son," she said simply. "I would give my life for you."
He opened his mouth to speak, but was surprised to find that he couldn't make a sound.
I certainly wouldn't banish you for marrying someone unsuitable.
Thank you, he said. It was all he could manage to say. Violet sighed, loudly enough to regain his full attention. She looked tired, wistful.
I wish your father were here, she said.
You don't say that very often, he said quietly.
I always wish your father were here.
She closed her eyes for a brief moment.
Always.
And then somehow it became clear. As he watched his mother's face, finally realizing, no, finally understanding the depth of his parents' love for one another, it all became clear. Love. He loved Sophie. That was all that should have mattered. He'd thought he'd loved the woman from the masquerade. He'd thought he'd wanted to marry her. But he understood now that that had been nothing but a dream, a fleeting fantasy of a woman he barely knew. But Sophie was Sophie. And that was everything he needed. Sophie wasn't a great believer in destiny or fate, but after 1 hour with Nicholas, Elizabeth, John, and Alice Wentworth, young cousins to the Bridgerton clan, she was beginning to think that maybe there was a reason she had never managed to obtain a position as a governess. She was exhausted. No, she thought, with more than a touch of desperation. Exhaustion didn't really provide an adequate description for the current state of her existence. Exhaustion didn't quite capture the slight edge of insanity the foursome had brought to her mind.
No, that's my doll,
Elizabeth said to Alice.
It's mine,
Alice returned.
It is not. Is too.
I'll settle this,
10-year-old Nicholas said, swaggering over with his hands on his hips. Sophie groaned. She had a feeling that it was not a terribly good idea to allow the dispute to be settled by a 10-year-old boy who happened to think he was a pirate.
Neither of you will want the doll,
he said, with a devious gleam in his eye.
If I simply lop off its...
Sophie leapt to intervene.
You will not lop off its head, Nicholas Wentworth. But then they'll stop.
No,
Sophie said forcefully. He looked at her, obviously assessing her commitment to that particular course of action, then grumbled and walked away.
I think we need a new game,
Hyacinth whispered to Sophie. I know we need a new game, Sophie muttered.
Let go of my soldier!
John screeched.
Let go! Let go! Let go! I'm never having children,
Hyacinth announced.
In fact, I may never get married.
Sophie forbore to point out that when Hyacinth married and had children, she would certainly have a flotilla of nurses and nannies to aid her with their keeping and care. Hyacinth winced as John pulled Alice's hair, then swallowed uncomfortably as Alice slugged John in the stomach.
The situation is growing desperate,
she whispered to Sophie.
Blind man's bluff,
Sophie suddenly exclaimed.
What do you think, everyone? How about a game of blind man's bluff?
Alice and John nodded enthusiastically, and Elizabeth gave a reluctant,
all right,
after carefully considering the issue.
What do you say, Nicholas?
Sophie asked, addressing the last remaining holdout.
It could be fun,
he said slowly, terrifying Sophie with the devilish gleam in his eye.
Excellent,
she said, trying to keep the wariness out of her voice.
But you must be the blind man,
he added. Sophie opened her mouth to protest, but at that moment the other three children started jumping up and down and squealing with delight. Then her fate was sealed when Hyacinth turned to her with a sly smile and said,
Oh, you must.
Sophie knew that protest was useless, so she let out a long, suffering sigh, exaggerated, just to delight the children, and turned around so that Hyacinth could fasten a scarf over her eyes.
Can you see?
Nicholas demanded.
No,
Sophie lied. He turned to Hyacinth with a grimace.
She can see.
How could he tell?
Add a second scarf,
he said.
This one is too sheer. The indignity,
Sophie muttered. But nonetheless, She leaned down slightly so that Hyacinth could tie another scarf over her eyes.
"She's blind now,"
John hooted. Sophie gave them all a sickly sweet smile.
"All right now,"
Nicholas said, clearly in charge.
"You wait 10 seconds so that we can take our places."
Sophie nodded, then tried not to wince as she heard the sounds of a mad scramble around the room.
"Try not to break anything,"
she yelled, as if that would make any difference to an overexcited 6-year-old.
"Are you ready?"
she asked. No response. That meant yes.
"Blind man,"
she called out.
"Bluff,"
came 5 voices in unison. Sophie frowned in concentration. One of the girls was definitely behind the sofa. She took a few baby steps to the right.
"Blind man, bluff,"
followed, of course, by a few titters and chuckles.
"Blind... ow!"
More hoots and squeals of laughter. Sophie grunted as she rubbed her bruised chin.
"Blind man,"
she called, with considerably less enthusiasm.
"Bluff! Bluff! 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 You are all mine, Alice,"
she muttered under her breath, deciding to go for the smallest and presumably weakest of the bunch.
"All mine."
Benedict had nearly made a clean escape. After his mother had left the sitting room, he'd downed a much-needed glass of brandy and headed out toward the door, only to be caught by Eloise, who informed him that he absolutely couldn't leave yet, that Mother was trying very hard to assemble all of her children in one place because Daphne had an important announcement to make. "With child again?" Benedict asked.
"Act surprised. You weren't supposed to know."
"I'm not going to act anything. I'm leaving." She made a desperate leap forward and somehow managed to grab his sleeve.
"You can't!"
Benedict let out a long breath and tried to pry her fingers off of his arm, but she had his shirt in a death grip. "I am going to pick up 1 foot," he said in slow, tedious tones, "and step forward. Then I will pick up the next foot."
"You promised Hyacinth you would help her with her arithmetic,"
Eloise blurted out.
"She hasn't seen hide nor hair of you in 2 weeks."
"It's not as if she has a school to flunk out of," Benedict muttered.
"Benedict, that is a terrible thing to say,"
Eloise exclaimed. "I know," he groaned, hoping to stave off a lecture.
"Just because we of the female gender are not allowed to study at places like Eton and Cambridge doesn't mean our educations are any less precious,"
Eloise ranted, completely ignoring her brother's weak, "I know."
"Furthermore,"
she carried on. Benedict sagged against the wall.
"I am of the opinion that the reason we are not allowed access is that if we were, we would trounce you men in all subjects."
"I'm sure you're right," he sighed.
"Don't patronise me."
"Believe me, Eloise, the last thing I would dream of doing is patronising you." She eyed him suspiciously before crossing her arms and saying,
"Well, don't disappoint Hyacinth."
"I won't," he said wearily.
"I believe she's in the nursery."
Benedict gave her a distracted nod, turning toward the stairs. But as he trudged on up, he didn't see Eloise turn toward his mother, who was peeking out of the music room, and give her a big wink and a smile. The nursery was located on the 2nd floor. Benedict didn't often come up that high. Most of his siblings' bedrooms were on the 1st floor. Only Gregory and Hyacinth still lived adjacent to the nursery, and with Gregory off at Eton most of the year, and Hyacinth usually terrorising someone in some other section of the house, Benedict simply didn't have much reason to visit. It didn't escape him that aside from the nursery, the 2nd floor was home to bedrooms for the higher servants, including the ladies' maids. Sophie. She was probably off in some corner somewhere with her mending. Certainly not in the nursery, which was the domain of nurses and nannies. A lady's maid would have no reason to... Benedict raised his brows. That was most definitely the sound of childish laughter, not something likely to come out of 14-year-old Hyacinth's mouth. Oh, right. His Wentworth cousins were visiting. His mother had mentioned something about that. Well, that would be a bonus. He hadn't seen them in a few months, and they were nice enough children, if a little high-spirited. As he approached the nursery door, the laughter increased, with a few squeals thrown in for good measure. The sounds brought a smile to Benedict's face, and he turned when he reached the open doorway, and then he saw her. Her! Not Sophie. Her. And yet, it was Sophie. She was blindfolded, smiling as she groped her hands toward the giggling children. He could see only the bottom half of her face, and that's when he knew. There was only one other woman in the world for whom he'd seen only the bottom half of her face. The smile was the same. The gamine little point at the end of her chin was the same. It was all the same. She was the woman in silver, the woman from the masquerade ball. It suddenly made sense. Only twice in his life had he felt this inexplicable, almost mystical attraction to a woman. He'd thought it remarkable, to have found two, when in his heart he'd always believed there was only one perfect woman out there for him. His heart had been right. There was only one. He'd searched for her for months. He'd pined for her even longer. And here she'd been right under his nose. And she hadn't told him. Did she understand what she'd put him through? How many hours he'd lain awake, feeling that he was betraying the lady in silver, the woman he'd dreamed of marrying, all because he was falling in love with a housemaid? Dear God, it bordered on the absurd. He'd finally decided to let the lady in silver go. He was going to ask Sophie to marry him. Social consequences be damned. And they were one and the same. A strange roaring filled his head, as if two enormous seashells had been clapped to his ears, whistling, whirring, humming, and the air suddenly smelled a bit acrid, and everything looked a little bit red, and Benedict could not take his eyes off of her. "Is something wrong?" Sophie asked. All the children had gone silent, staring at Benedict with open mouths and large, large eyes. "Hyacinth," he bit off, "will you please evacuate the room?"
"But..."
"Now!" he roared.
"Nicholas, Elizabeth, John, Alice, come along now," Hyacinth said quickly, her voice cracking. "There are biscuits in the kitchen, and I know that..."
But Benedict didn't hear the rest. Hyacinth had managed to clear the room out in record time, and her voice was disappearing down the hall as she ushered the children away.
"Benedict,"
Sophie was saying, fumbling with the knot at the back of her head.
"Benedict."
He shut the door. The click was so loud she jumped.
"What's wrong?"
she whispered. He said nothing, just watched her as she tore at the scarf. He liked it that she was helpless. He didn't feel terribly kind and charitable at the moment.
"Do you have something you need to tell me?"
he asked. His voice was controlled, but his hands were shaking. She went still, so still that he would have sworn that he could see the heat rise from her body. Then she cleared her throat, an uncomfortable, awkward sort of sound, and went back to work on the knot. Her movements tightened her dress around her breasts, but Benedict felt not one speck of desire. It was, he thought ironically, the first time he hadn't felt desire for this woman in either of her incarnations.
"Can you help me with this?"
she asked, but her voice was hesitant. Benedict didn't move.
"Benedict?"
"It's interesting to see you with a scarf tied around your head, Sophie," he said softly.
Her hands dropped slowly to her sides.
"It's almost like a demi-mask, wouldn't you say?"
Her lips parted, and the soft rush of air that crossed them was the room's only noise. He walked toward her, slowly, inexorably, his footsteps just loud enough so that she had to know he was stalking her.
"I haven't been to a masquerade in many years," he said.
She knew. He could see it in her face, the way she held her mouth, tight at the corners, and yet still slightly open. She knew that he knew. He hoped she was terrified. He took another 2 steps toward her, then abruptly turned to the right, his arm brushing past her sleeve.
"Were you ever going to tell me that we'd met before?"
Her mouth moved, but she didn't speak.
"Were you?"
he asked, his voice low and controlled. "No," she said, her voice wavering.
"Really?"
She didn't make a sound.
"Any particular reason?"
It didn't seem pertinent.
He whirled around.
"It didn't seem pertinent,"
he snapped.
"I fell in love with you 2 years ago and it didn't seem pertinent."
"Can I please remove the scarf?"
she whispered.
"You can remain blind."
"Benedict, I..."
"Like I was blind this past month,"
he continued angrily.
"Why don't you see how you like it?"
"You didn't fall in love with me 2 years ago,
she said, yanking at the too tight scarf.
"How would you know? You disappeared."
"I had to disappear,"
she cried out.
"I didn't have a choice."
"We always have choices,"
he said condescendingly.
"We call it free will."
"That's easy for you to say,"
she snapped, tugging frantically at the blindfold.
"You, who have everything. I had to... Oh!"
With one wrenching movement, she somehow managed to yank down the scarves until they hung loosely around her neck. Sophie blinked against the sudden onslaught of light. Then she caught sight of Benedict's face and stumbled back a step. His eyes were on fire, burning with a rage and, yes, a hurt that she could barely comprehend.
"It's good to see you, Sophie,"
he said in a dangerously low voice.
"If indeed that is your real name."
She nodded.
"It occurs to me," he said, a little too casually, "if you were at the masquerade, then you are not exactly of the servant class, are you?"
"I didn't have an invitation,"
she said hastily.
"I was a fraud, a pretender. I had no right to be there."
"You lied to me. Through everything, all this, you lied to me."
"I had to,"
she whispered.
"Oh, please. What could possibly be so terrible that you must conceal your identity from me?"
Sophie gulped. Here in the Bridgerton nursery, with him looming over her, she couldn't quite remember why she'd decided not to tell him that she was the lady at the masquerade. Maybe she'd feared that he would want her to become his mistress, which had happened anyway. Or maybe she hadn't said anything, because by the time she'd realised that this wasn't going to be a chance meeting, that he wasn't about to let Sophie the housemaid out of his life, it was too late. She'd gone too long without telling him, and she feared his rage. Which was exactly what had happened, proving her point. Of course, that was cold consolation as she stood across from him, watching his eyes go hot with anger and cold with disdain, all at the same time. Maybe the truth, as unflattering as it might be, was that her pride had been stung. She'd been disappointed that he hadn't recognised her himself. If the night of the masquerade had been as magical for him as it had been for her, shouldn't he have known instantly who she was? 2 years she'd spent dreaming about him. 2 years she'd seen his face every night in her mind. And yet, when he'd seen hers, he'd seen a stranger. Or maybe, just maybe, it hadn't been any of those things. Maybe it was simpler than that. Maybe she'd just wanted to protect her heart. She didn't know why, but she'd felt a little safer, a little less exposed as an anonymous housemaid. If Benedict had known who she was, or at least known that she'd been the woman at the masquerade, then he would have pursued her, relentlessly. Oh, he had certainly pursued her when he'd thought she'd been a maid, but it would have been different if he'd known the truth. Sophie was sure of it. He wouldn't have perceived the class differences as being quite so great, and Sophie would have lost an important barrier between them. Her social status, or lack thereof, had been a protective wall around her heart. She couldn't get too close because, quite honestly, she couldn't get too close. A man such as Benedict, son of and brother to Viscounts, would never marry a servant. But an earl's byblow, now that was a much trickier situation. Unlike a servant, an aristocratic bastard could dream. But like those of a servant, the dreams weren't likely to come true, making the dreaming all that much more painful. And she'd known, every time it had been on the tip of her tongue to blurt out her secret, she had known that telling him the truth would lead straight to a broken heart. It almost made Sophie want to laugh. Her heart couldn't possibly feel worse than it did now.
"I searched for you," he said, his low, intense voice cutting into her thoughts.
Her eyes widened, grew wet.
"You did?"
she whispered.
"For 6 bloody months," he cursed. "It was as if you fell right off the face of the earth."
"I had nowhere to go,"
she said, not sure why she was telling him that.
"You had me."
The words hung in the air, heavy and dark. Finally, Sophie, propelled by some perverse sense of belated honesty, said,
"I didn't know you searched for me, but...
She choked on the word, closing her eyes tightly against the pain of the moment.
"But what?"
She swallowed convulsively, and when she did open her eyes, she did not look at his face.
"Even if I'd known you were looking,"
she said, hugging her arms to her body,
"I wouldn't have let you find me."
"Was I that repulsive to you?"
"No,"
she cried out, her eyes flying to his face. There was hurt there. He hid it well, but she knew him well. There was hurt in his eyes.
"No,"
she said, trying to make her voice calm and even.
"It wasn't that. It could never be that."
"Then what?"
"We're from different worlds, Benedict. Even then I knew that there could be no future for us. And it would have been torture to tease myself with a dream that couldn't come true. I couldn't do that."
"Who are you?"
he asked suddenly. She just stared at him, frozen into inaction.
"Tell me,"
he bit off.
"Tell me who you are, because you're no damned lady's maid, that's for certain."
"I'm exactly who I said I was,"
she said. Then, at his murderous glare, hastily added,
"Almost."
He advanced on her.
"Who are you?"
She backed up another step.
"Sophia Beckett."
"Who are you?"
"I've been a servant since I was 14.
"And who were you before that?"
Her voice dropped to a whisper.
"A bastard."
"Whose bastard?"
"Does it matter?"
His stance grew more belligerent.
"It matters to me."
Sophie felt herself deflate. She hadn't expected him to ignore the duties of his birth and actually marry someone like her, but she'd hoped he wouldn't care quite that much.
"Who were your parents?"
Benedict persisted.
"No one you know."
"Who were your parents?"
he roared.
"The Earl of Penwood,"
she cried out. He stood utterly still, not a muscle moving. He didn't even blink.
"I am a nobleman's bastard,"
she said harshly, years of anger and resentment pouring forth.
"My father was the Earl of Penwood, and my mother was a maid. Yes,"
she spat out when she saw his face grow pale.
"My mother was a lady's maid, just as I am a lady's maid."
A heavy pause filled the air, and then Sophie said in a low voice,
"I won't be like my mother."
"And yet, if she'd behaved otherwise,"
he said,
"you wouldn't be here to tell me about it."
"That's not the point."
Benedict's hands, which had been fisted at his sides, began to twitch.
"You lied to me,"
he said in a low voice.
"There was no need to tell you the truth."
"Who the hell are you to decide?"
he exploded.
Poor little Benedict. He can't handle the truth. He can't make up his own mind. He broke off, disgusted by the whiny edge to his voice. She was turning him into someone he didn't know, someone he didn't like. He had to get out of there. He had to...
Benedict?
She was looking at him oddly. Her eyes were concerned. I have to go, he muttered. I can't see you right now.
Why?
She asked, and he could see from her face that she instantly regretted the question. I am so angry right now, he said, each word a slow, staccato beat in the sentence, that I don't know myself. He looked down at his hands. They were shaking. He wanted to hurt her, he realized. No, he didn't want to hurt her. He would never want to hurt her. And yet, it was the first time in his life he'd felt so out of control. It scared him. I have to go, he said again, and he brushed roughly past her as he strode out the door. Chapter 20.
While we are on the topic, Miss Ryling's mother, the Countess of Penwood, has also been acting very strange of late. According to servants' gossip, which we all know is always the most reliable sort, the Countess threw quite the tantrum last night, hurling no fewer than 17 shoes at her servants. One footman sports a bruised eye, but other than that, all remain in good health.
Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 11th of June, 1817. Within an hour, Sophie had her bag packed. She didn't know what else to do. She was gripped, painfully gripped, by nervous energy, and she could not sit still. Her feet kept moving, and her hands were shaking, and every few minutes she found herself taking a big, spontaneous gulp of air, as if the extra breath could somehow calm her inside. She could not imagine that she would be allowed to remain here in Lady Bridgerton's household after such a horrible falling out with Benedict. Lady Bridgerton was fond of Sophie, it was true, but Benedict was her son. Blood really was thicker than just about anything else, especially when it was Bridgerton blood. It was sad, really, she thought, as she sat down on her bed, her hands still torturing a hopelessly mangled handkerchief. For all her inner turmoil over Benedict, she'd liked living in the Bridgerton household. Sophie had never before had the honour of living amongst a group of people who truly understood the meaning of the word family. She would miss them. She would miss Benedict, and she would mourn the life she could not have. Unable to sit still, she jumped back to her feet and walked to the window.
"Damn you, Papa," she said, looking up at the skies. "There, I've called you Papa. You never let me do that. You never wanted to be that."
She gasped convulsively, using the back of her hand to wipe at her nose.
"I've called you Papa. How does it feel?"
But there was no sudden clap of thunder, no grey cloud appearing out of nowhere to cover up the sun. Her father would never know how angry she was with him for leaving her penniless, leaving her with Araminta. Most likely he wouldn't have cared. She felt rather weary, and she leaned against the window frame, rubbing her eyes with her hand.
"You gave me a taste of another life," she whispered, "and then left me in the wind. It would have been so much easier if I'd been raised a servant. I wouldn't have wanted so much. It would have been easier."
She turned back around, her eyes falling upon her single, meagre bag. She hadn't wanted to take any of the dresses that Lady Bridgerton and her daughters had given her, but she'd had little choice in the matter, as her old dresses had already been relegated to the rag bin. So she'd chosen only two, the same number with which she'd arrived, the one she happened to be wearing when Benedict had discovered her identity, and a spare, which she'd tucked in the bag. The rest had been left hanging, neatly pressed in the wardrobe. Sophie sighed,
closing her eyes for a moment. It was time to go. Where, she didn't know, but she couldn't stay here. She leaned down and picked up the bag. She had a little money saved. Not much, but if she worked and was frugal, she'd have enough funds for passage to America within a year. She'd heard that things were easier there for those of less than respectable birth, that the boundaries of class weren't quite as strict as they were here in England. She poked her head out into the hall, which was blessedly vacant. She knew she was a coward, but she didn't want to have to say goodbye to the Bridgerton daughters. She might do something really stupid, like cry, and then she'd feel even worse. Never in her life had she had the chance to spend time with women of her own age who treated her with respect and affection. She'd once hoped that Rosamond and Posy would be her sisters, but that had never come to pass. Posy might have tried, but Araminta wouldn't allow it, and Posy, for all her sweetness, had never been strong enough to stand up to her mother. But she did have to bid farewell to Lady Bridgerton. There was no getting around that. Lady Bridgerton had been kind to her, far beyond any expectations, and Sophie would not thank her by sneaking out and disappearing like some criminal. If she was lucky, Lady Bridgerton would not yet have heard of her altercation with Benedict. Sophie could give her notice, bid her farewell, and be off. It was late afternoon, well past tea time, so Sophie decided to take a chance and see if Lady Bridgerton was in the small office she kept off of her bedchamber. It was a warm and cosy little room, with a writing desk and several bookshelves, a place where Lady Bridgerton penned her correspondence and settled the household accounts. The door was ajar, so Sophie knocked softly, allowing the door to swing open a few inches as her knuckles connected with the wood.
"Enter,"
came Lady Bridgerton's bidding. Sophie pushed the door open and poked her head in.
"Am I interrupting?"
she asked quietly. Lady Bridgerton set down her quill.
"Yes, but it's a welcome interruption. I've never enjoyed balancing the household accounts."
"I would..." Sophie bit her tongue. She had been about to say that she would have been happy to take over the task. She'd always been good with numbers.
"You were saying?"
Lady Bridgerton asked, her eyes warm. Sophie gave her head a little shake.
"Nothing."
The room lapsed into silence, until Lady Bridgerton gave Sophie a slightly amused smile and asked,
"Was there a specific reason you knocked on my door?"
Sophie took a deep breath that was meant to settle her nerves, but didn't, and said,
"Yes."
Lady Bridgerton looked at her expectantly, but didn't say anything.
"I'm afraid I must resign my position here,"
Sophie said. Lady Bridgerton actually rose out of her seat.
"But why? Aren't you happy? Have any of the girls been mistreating you?"
"No, no,"
Sophie hastened to assure her.
"That could not be further from the truth. Your daughters are so lovely, in heart as well as in appearance. I've never... that is to say, no one has ever..." "What is it, Sophie?"
Sophie clutched at the doorframe, desperately trying to find her balance. Her legs felt unsteady. Her heart felt unsteady. Any moment now she was going to burst into tears. And why? Because the man she loved would never marry her? Because he hated her for lying to him? Because he'd broken her heart twice? Once by asking her to be his mistress, and once by making her love his family, and then forcing her to leave? He might not have demanded that she go, but it couldn't have been more obvious that she could not stay.
"It's Benedict, isn't it?"
Sophie's head snapped up. Lady Bridgerton smiled sadly.
"It's obvious that there is some feeling between you,"
she said gently, answering the question that Sophie knew must show in her eyes.
"Why didn't you fire me?"
Sophie whispered. She didn't think that Lady Bridgerton knew that Sophie and Benedict had been intimate, but no one of Lady Bridgerton's position would want her son pining for a housemaid.
"I don't know,"
Lady Bridgerton replied, looking more conflicted than Sophie could ever have imagined.
I probably should have done.
She shrugged, her eyes strangely helpless.
But I like you.
The tears Sophie had been working so hard to keep in check began to roll down her face. But beyond that, she somehow managed to keep her composure. She didn't shake, and she didn't make a sound. She just stood there, utterly still, as the tears came forth. When Lady Bridgerton spoke again, her words held a very careful and measured quality, as if she were choosing them with great care, searching for a specific reply.
"You are," she said, her eyes never leaving Sophie's face, "the sort of woman I would like for my son. Our acquaintance has not been a long one, but I know your character, and I know your heart. And I wish..." A small, choked sob burst forth from Sophie's mouth, but she swallowed it down as quickly as she could.
"I wish that you were of a different background," Lady Bridgerton continued, acknowledging Sophie's cry with a sympathetic tilt of her head and a sad, slow blink of her eyes.
"Not that I hold such a thing against you, or think the less of you, but it makes things very difficult."
"Impossible," Sophie whispered.
Lady Bridgerton didn't say anything, and Sophie knew that in her heart she agreed, if not completely, then 98% with her assessment.
"Is it possible?" Lady Bridgerton asked, her words even more measured and careful than before, "that your background is not quite what it seems."
Sophie said nothing.
"There are things about you that don't add up, Sophie."
Sophie knew that she expected her to ask what, but she had a fair idea what Lady Bridgerton meant.
"Your accent is impeccable," Lady Bridgerton said. "I know you told me that you had lessons with the children your mother worked for, but that doesn't seem like enough of an explanation to me. Those lessons wouldn't have started until you were a bit older, 6 at the very earliest, and your speech patterns would have already been rather set by that point."
Sophie felt her eyes widen. She'd never seen that particular hole in her story, and she was rather surprised that no one else had until now. But then again, Lady Bridgerton was a good deal smarter than most of the people to whom she had told her fabricated history.
"And you know Latin," Lady Bridgerton said. "Don't try to deny it. I heard you muttering under your breath the other day when Hyacinth vexed you."
Sophie kept her gaze fixed firmly on the window just to Lady Bridgerton's left. She couldn't quite bring herself to meet her eyes.
"Thank you for not denying it," Lady Bridgerton said.
And then she waited for Sophie to say something. Waited so long that finally Sophie had to fill the interminable silence.
"I'm not a suitable match for your son," was all she said.
"I see.
I really have to go."
She had to get the words out quickly, before she changed her mind. Lady Bridgerton nodded.
"If that is your wish, there is nothing I can do to stop you. Where is it you plan to go?"
"I have relatives in the north," Sophie lied.
Lady Bridgerton clearly didn't believe her, but she answered,
"You will, of course, use one of our carriages."
"No, I couldn't possibly."
"You can't think I would permit you to do otherwise. I consider you to be my responsibility, at least for the next few days, and it is far too dangerous for you to leave unescorted. It's not safe for women alone in this world."
Sophie couldn't quite suppress a rueful smile. Lady Bridgerton's tone might be different, but her words were almost exactly those uttered by Benedict a few weeks earlier. And look where that had gotten her. She would never say that she and Lady Bridgerton were close friends, but she knew her well enough to know that she would not be budged on this issue.
"Very well," Sophie acceded. "Thank you."
She could have the carriage drop her off somewhere, preferably not too far from a port where she could eventually book passage to America, and then decide where to go from there. Lady Bridgerton offered her a small, sad smile.
"I assume you already have your bags packed."
Sophie nodded.
It didn't seem necessary to point out that she only had one bag, singular.
Have you made all of your goodbyes?
Sophie shook her head.
I'd rather not,
she admitted. Lady Bridgerton stood and nodded.
Sometimes that is best,
she agreed.
Why don't you await me in the front hall? I will see to having a coach brought round.
Sophie turned and started to walk out, but when she reached the doorway, she stopped and turned around.
Lady Bridgerton, I...
The older lady's eyes lit up, as if she were expecting some good news. Or, if not good, then at least something different.
Yes?
Sophie swallowed.
I just wanted to thank you.
The light in Lady Bridgerton's eyes dimmed a little.
Whatever for? For having me here. For accepting me. And allowing me to pretend I was a part of your family. Don't be silly. You didn't have to let me take tea with you and the girls,
Sophie interrupted. If she didn't get this all out now, she'd lose her courage.
Most women wouldn't have done. It was lovely and new and...
She gulped.
I will miss you all.
You don't have to go, Lady Bridgerton said softly. Sophie tried to smile, but it came out all wobbly, and it tasted like tears.
Yes,
she said, almost choking on the word.
I do.
Lady Bridgerton stared at her for a very long moment, her pale blue eyes filled with compassion, and then maybe a touch of realization.
I see, she said quietly,
and Sophie feared that she did see.
I'll meet you downstairs,
Lady Bridgerton said. Sophie nodded as she stood aside to let the Dowager Viscountess pass. Lady Bridgerton paused in the hallway, looking down at Sophie's well-worn bag.
Is that all you have?
She asked.
Everything in the world.
Lady Bridgerton swallowed uncomfortably, and her cheeks took on the slightest hue of pink, almost as if she were actually embarrassed by her riches, and Sophie's lack thereof.
But that, Sophie said, motioning to the bag, that's not what's important. What you have.
She stopped and swallowed, doing battle with the lump in her throat.
I don't mean what you own.
I know what you mean, Sophie. Lady Bridgerton dabbed at her eyes with her fingers.
Thank you.
Sophie's shoulders rose and fell in a tiny shrug.
It's the truth. Let me give you some money before you go, Sophie,
Lady Bridgerton blurted out. Sophie shook her head.
I couldn't. I've already taken two of the dresses you gave me. I didn't want to, but it's all right,
Lady Bridgerton assured her.
What else could you do? The ones you came with are gone.
She cleared her throat.
But please, let me give you some money.
She saw Sophie open her mouth to protest and said,
Please. It would make me feel better.
Lady Bridgerton had a way of looking at a person that truly made one want to do as she asked. And besides that, Sophie really did need the money. Lady Bridgerton was a generous lady. She might even give Sophie enough to book third-class passage across the ocean. Sophie found herself saying,
Thank you,
before her conscience had a chance to grapple with the offer. Lady Bridgerton gave her a brief nod and disappeared down the hall. Sophie took a long, shaky breath, then picked up her bag and walked slowly down the stairs. She waited in the foyer for a moment, then decided she might as well wait outside. It was a fine spring day, and Sophie thought that a bit of sun on her nose might be just the thing to make her feel better. Well, at least a little bit better. Besides, she'd be less likely to run into one of the Bridgerton daughters, and much as she was going to miss them, she just didn't want to have to say goodbye. Still clutching her bag in one hand, she pushed open the front door and descended the steps. It shouldn't take too long for the coach to be brought around. 5 minutes, maybe 10, maybe...
Sophie Beckett!
Sophie's stomach dropped right down to her ankles.
Araminta! How could she have forgotten?
Frozen into inaction,
She looked around and up the stairs, trying to figure out which way to flee. If she ran back into the Bridgerton house, Araminta would know where to find her. And if she took off on foot...
"Constable!" Araminta shrieked. "I want a constable!"
Sophie dropped her bag and took off running.
"Someone stop her!" Araminta screamed. "Stop thief! Stop thief!"
Sophie kept running, even though she knew it would make her look guilty. She ran with every last fibre in her muscles, with every gulp of air she could force into her lungs. She ran and she ran and she ran, until someone tackled her, thumping into her back and knocking her to the ground.
"I've got her!"
the man yelled.
"I've got her for you!"
Sophie blinked and gasped at the pain. Her head had hit the pavement with a stunning blow, and the man who had caught her was practically sitting on her abdomen.
"There you are!" Araminta crowed as she hurried over. "Sophie Beckett! The nerve!"
Sophie glared at her. Words didn't exist to express the loathing in her heart, not to mention that she was in too much pain to speak.
"I've been looking for you," Araminta said, smiling evilly. "Posy told me she'd seen you."
Sophie closed her eyes for a longer than the usual blink. Oh, Posy. She doubted that she'd meant to give her away, but Posy's tongue had a way of getting ahead of her mind. Araminta planted her foot very close to Sophie's hand. The one that was being held immobile by her captor's fingers around her wrist, then smiled as she moved her foot onto Sophie's hand.
"You shouldn't have stolen from me," Araminta said, her blue eyes glinting.
Sophie just grunted. It was all she could manage.
"You see," Araminta continued gleefully, "now I can have you thrown in jail. I suppose I could have done so before, but now I have the truth on my side."
Just then, a man ran up, skidding to a halt before Araminta.
"The authorities are on the way, m'lady. We'll have this thief taken away in no time."
Sophie caught her lower lip between her teeth, torn between praying that the authorities would be delayed until Lady Bridgerton came outside, and praying that they'd come right away, so that the Bridgertons would never see her shame. And, in the end, she got her wish. The latter one, that was. Not 2 minutes later, the authorities arrived, threw her into a wagon, and carted her off to jail. And all Sophie could think of as she rode away was that the Bridgertons would never know what had happened to her. And maybe that was for the best. Chapter 21.
La, but such excitement yesterday on the front steps of Lady Bridgerton's residence on Bruton Street. First, Penelope Featherington was seen in the company of not one, not two, but three Bridgerton brothers. Surely a heretofore impossible feat for the poor girl, who is rather infamous for her wallflower ways. Sadly, but perhaps predictably for Miss Featherington, when she finally departed, it was on the arm of the Viscount, the only married man in the bunch. If Miss Featherington were to somehow manage to drag a Bridgerton brother to the altar, it would surely mean the end of the world as we know it. And this author, who freely admits she would not know heads from tails in such a world, would be forced to resign her post on the spot. If Miss Featherington's gathering weren't enough gossip, not 3 hours later, a woman was accosted right in front of the townhouse by the Countess of Penwood, who lives 3 doors down. It seems the woman, who this author suspects was working in the Bridgerton household, used to work for Lady Penwood. Lady Penwood alleges that the unidentified woman stole from her 2 years ago and immediately had the poor thing carted off to jail. This author is not certain what the punishment is these days for theft, but one has to suspect that if one has the audacity to steal from a countess, the punishment is quite strict. The poor girl in question is likely to be hanged, or at the very least find herself transported. The previous housemaid wars, reported last month in this column, seem rather trivial now. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers,
13th of June, 1817. Benedict's first inclination the following morning was to pour himself a good, stiff drink, or maybe three. It might have been scandalously early in the day for spirits, but alcoholic oblivion sounded rather appealing after the emotional skewering he'd received the previous evening at the hands of Sophie Beckett. But then he remembered that he'd made a date that morning for a fencing match with his brother Colin. Suddenly, skewering his brother sounded rather appealing, no matter that he'd had nothing to do with Benedict's wretched mood. That, Benedict thought with a grim smile, as he pulled on his gear, was what brothers were for. "I've only an hour," Colin said, as he attached the safety tip to his foil. "I have an appointment this afternoon." "No matter," Benedict replied, lunging forward a few times to loosen up the muscles in his leg. He hadn't fenced in some time. The sword felt good in his hand. He drew back and touched the tip to the floor, letting the blade bend slightly. "It won't take more than an hour to best you." Colin rolled his eyes before he drew down his mask. Benedict walked to the centre of the room. "Are you ready?" "Not quite," Colin replied, following him. Benedict lunged again. "I said I wasn't ready," Colin hollered as he jumped out of the way. "You're too slow," Benedict snapped. Colin cursed under his breath, then added a louder, "Bloody hell," for good measure. "What's gotten into you?" "Nothing," Benedict nearly snarled. "Why would you say so?" Colin took a step backward until they were a suitable distance apart to start the match. "Oh, I don't know," he intoned, sarcasm evident. "I suppose it could be because you nearly took my head off. I've a tip on my blade." "And you were slashing like you were using a sabre," Colin shot back. Benedict gave a hard smile. "It's more fun that way." "Not for my neck." Colin passed his sword from hand to hand as he flexed and stretched his fingers. He paused and frowned. "You sure you have a foil there?" Benedict scowled. "For the love of God, Colin, I would never use a real weapon." "Just making sure," Colin muttered, touching his neck lightly. "Are you ready?" Benedict nodded and bent his knees. "Regular rules," Colin said, assuming a fencer's crouch. "No slashing." Benedict gave him a curt nod. "En garde!" Both men raised their right arms, twisting their wrists until their palms were up, foils gripped in their fingers. "Is that new?" Colin suddenly asked, eyeing the handle of Benedict's foil with interest. Benedict cursed at the loss of his concentration. "Yes, it's new," he bit off. "I prefer an Italian grip." Colin stepped back, completely losing his fencing posture as he looked at his own foil with a less elaborate French grip. "Might I borrow it sometime? I wouldn't mind seeing if..." "Yes," Benedict snapped, barely resisting the urge to advance and lunge that very second. "Will you get back en garde?" Colin gave him a lopsided smile, and Benedict just knew that he had asked about his grip simply to annoy him. "As you wish," Colin murmured, assuming position again. They held still for one moment, and then Colin said, "Fence!" Benedict advanced immediately, lunging and attacking, but Colin had always been particularly fleet of foot, and he retreated carefully, meeting Benedict's attack with an expert parry. "You're in a bloody bad mood today," Colin said, lunging forward and just nearly catching Benedict on the shoulder. Benedict stepped out of his way, lifting his blade to block the attack. "Yes, well, I had a bad..." He advanced again, his foil stretched straight forward. "Day!" Colin sidestepped his attack neatly. "Nice riposte," he said, touching his forehead with the handle of his foil in a mock salute. "Shut up and fence," Benedict snapped. Colin chuckled and advanced, swishing his blade this way and that, keeping Benedict on the retreat. "It must be a woman," he said. Benedict blocked Colin's attack and quickly began his own advance. None of your damned business. It's a woman, Colin said, smirking. Benedict lunged forward, the tip of his foil catching Colin on the collarbone. Point, he grunted. Colin gave a curt nod. Touch for you. They walked back to the centre of the room. Are you ready? He asked. Benedict nodded. En garde! Fence! This time Colin was the first to take the attack. If you need some advice about women, he said, driving Benedict back to the corner. Benedict raised his foil, blocking Colin's attack with enough force to send his younger brother stumbling backward. If I need advice about women, he returned, the last person I'd go to would be you. You wound me, Colin said, regaining his balance. No, Benedict drawled. That's what the safety tip is for. I certainly have a better record with women than you. Oh, really? Benedict said sarcastically. He stuck his nose in the air and, in a fair imitation of Colin, said, I am certainly not going to marry Penelope Featherington. Colin winced. You, Benedict said, shouldn't be giving advice to anyone. I didn't know she was there. Benedict lunged forward, just barely missing Colin's shoulder. That's no excuse. You were in public, in broad daylight. Even if she hadn't been there, someone would have heard, and the bloody thing would have ended up in Whistledown. Colin met his lunge with a parry, then riposted with blinding speed, catching Benedict neatly in the belly. My touch, he grunted. Benedict gave him a nod, acknowledging the point. I was foolish, Colin said, as they walked back to the centre of the room. You, on the other hand, are stupid. What the hell does that mean? Colin sighed as he pushed up his mask. Why don't you just do us all a favour and marry the girl? Benedict just stared at him, his hand going limp around the handle of his sword. Was there any possibility that Colin didn't know who they were talking about? He removed his mask and looked into his brother's dark green eyes and nearly groaned. Colin knew. He didn't know how Colin knew, but he definitely knew. He supposed he shouldn't have been surprised. Colin always knew everything. In fact, the only person who ever seemed to know more gossip than Colin was Eloise, and it never took her more than a few hours to impart all of her dubious wisdom to Colin. How did you know? Benedict finally asked. One corner of Colin's mouth tilted up into a crooked smile. About Sophie? It's rather obvious. Colin, she's a maid. Who cares? What is going to happen to you if you marry her? Colin asked, with a devil-may-care shrug of his shoulders. People you couldn't care less about will ostracize you. Hell, I wouldn't mind being ostracized by some of the people with whom I'm forced to socialize. Benedict shrugged dismissively. I'd already decided I didn't care about all that, he said. Then what in bloody hell is the problem? Colin demanded. It's complicated. Nothing is ever as complicated as it is in one's mind. Benedict mulled that over, planting the tip of his foil against the floor and allowing the flexible blade to wiggle back and forth. Do you remember Mother's masquerade? He asked. Colin blinked at the unexpected question. A few years ago, right before she moved out of Bridgerton House. Benedict nodded. That's the one. Do you remember meeting a woman dressed in silver? You came upon us in the hall. Of course. You were rather taken with... Colin's eyes suddenly bugged out. That wasn't Sophie. Remarkable, isn't it? Benedict murmured, his every inflection screaming understatement. But how? I don't know how she got there, but she's not a maid. She's not? Well, she is a maid, Benedict clarified. But she's also the bastard daughter of the Earl of Penwood. Not the current, no, the one who died several years back. And you knew all this? No, Benedict said, the word short and staccato on his tongue. I did not.
Oh. Colin caught his lower lip between his teeth as he digested the meaning of his brother's short sentence.
I see.
He stared at Benedict.
What are you going to do?
Benedict's sword, whose blade had been wiggling back and forth as he pressed the tip against the floor, suddenly sprang straight and skittered out of his hand. He watched it dispassionately as it slid across the floor and didn't look back up as he said,
"That's a very good question."
He was still furious with Sophie for her deception, but neither was he without blame. He shouldn't have demanded that Sophie be his mistress. It had certainly been his right to ask, but it had also been her right to refuse. And once she had done so, he should have let her be. Benedict hadn't been brought up a bastard, and if her experience had been sufficiently wretched so that she refused to risk bearing a bastard herself, well then, he should have respected that. If he respected her, then he had to respect her beliefs. He shouldn't have been so flip with her, insisting that anything was possible, that she was free to make any choice her heart desired. His mother was right. He did live a charmed life. He had wealth, family, happiness, and nothing was truly out of his reach. The only awful thing that had ever happened in his life was the sudden and untimely death of his father, and even then he'd had his family to help him through. It was difficult for him to imagine certain pains and hurts because he'd never experienced them. And, unlike Sophie, he'd never been alone. What now? He had already decided that he was prepared to brave social ostracism and marry her. The unrecognized bastard daughter of an earl was a slightly more acceptable match than a servant, but only slightly. London society might accept her if he forced them to, but they wouldn't go out of their way to be kind. He and Sophie would most likely have to live quietly in the country, eschewing the London society that would almost certainly shun them. But it took his heart less than a second to know that a quiet life with Sophie was by far preferable to a public life without her. Did it matter that she was the woman from the masquerade? She'd lied to him about her identity, but he knew her soul. When they kissed, when they laughed, when they simply sat and talked, she had never feigned a moment. The woman who could make his heart sing with a simple smile, the woman who could fill him with contentment just through the simple act of sitting by him while he sketched, that was the real Sophie. And he loved her.
"You look as if you've reached a decision," Colin said quietly.
Benedict eyed his brother thoughtfully. When had he grown so perceptive? Come to think of it, when had he grown up? Benedict had always thought of Colin as a youthful rascal, charming and debonair, but not one who had ever had to assume any sort of responsibility. But when he regarded his brother now, he saw someone else. His shoulders were a little broader, his posture a little more steady and subdued, and his eyes looked wiser. That was the biggest change. If eyes truly were windows to the soul, then Colin's soul had gone and grown up on him when Benedict hadn't been paying attention.
"I owe her a few apologies," Benedict said. "I'm sure she'll forgive you. She owes me several as well, more than several."
Benedict could tell that his brother wanted to ask, "What for?" But to his credit, all Colin said was,
"Are you willing to forgive her?"
Benedict nodded. Colin reached out and plucked Benedict's foil from his hands.
"I'll put this away for you."
Benedict stared at his brother's fingers for a rather stupidly long moment before snapping to attention.
"I have to go," he blurted out.
Colin barely suppressed a grin.
"I surmised as much."
Benedict stared at his brother, and then, for no other reason than an overwhelming urge, he reached out and pulled him into a quick hug.
"I don't say this often," he said,
his voice starting to sound gruff in his ears.
"But I love you. I love you too, big brother."
Colin's smile, always a little bit lopsided, grew. "Now, get the hell out of here!" Benedict tossed his mask at his brother and strode out of the room.
"What do you mean she's gone?"
"Just that, I'm afraid," Lady Bridgerton said, her eyes sad and sympathetic. "She's gone." The pressure behind Benedict's temples began to build. It was a wonder his head didn't explode.
"And you just let her go?"
"It would hardly have been legal for me to force her to stay." Benedict nearly groaned. It had hardly been legal for him to force her to come to London, but he'd done it anyway.
"Where did she go?"
he demanded. His mother seemed to deflate in her chair.
"I don't know. I had insisted that she take one of our coaches, partly because I feared for her safety, but also because I wanted to know where she went."
Benedict slammed his hands on the desk.
"Well, then what happened?"
"As I was trying to say, I attempted to get her to take one of our coaches, but it was obvious she didn't want to, and she disappeared before I could have the carriage brought round."
Benedict cursed under his breath. Sophie was probably still in London, but London was huge and hugely populated. It would be damn near impossible to find someone who didn't want to be found.
"I had assumed," Violet said delicately, "that the two of you had had a falling out."
Benedict raked his hand through his hair, then caught sight of his white sleeve. "Oh, Jesus," he muttered. He'd run over here in his fencing clothes. He looked up at his mother with a roll of his eyes.
"No lectures on blasphemy just now, Mother. Please."
Her lips twitched.
"I wouldn't dream of it."
"Where am I going to find her?"
The levity left Violet's eyes.
"I don't know, Benedict. I wish I did. I quite liked Sophie."
"She's Penwood's daughter," he said.
Violet frowned.
"I suspected something like that. Illegitimate, I assume?"
Benedict nodded. His mother opened her mouth to say something, but he never did find out what, because at that moment the door to her office came flying open, slamming against the wall with an amazing crash. Francesca, who had obviously been running across the house, smashed into her mother's desk, followed by Hyacinth, who smashed into Francesca.
"What is wrong?"
Violet asked, rising to her feet.
"It's Sophie,"
Francesca panted.
"I know,"
Violet said.
"She's gone. We..." "No!"
Hyacinth cut in, slapping a piece of paper down on the desk.
"Look!"
Benedict tried to grab the paper, which he immediately recognised as an issue of Whistledown, but his mother got there first.
"What is it?"
he asked, his stomach sinking as he watched her face pale. She handed him the paper. He scanned it quickly, passing by bits about the Duke of Ashbourne, the Earl of Macclesfield, and Penelope Featherington, before he reached the section about what had to be Sophie.
"Jail?"
he said, the word mere breath on his lips.
"We must see her released,"
his mother said, throwing her shoulders back like a general girding for battle. But Benedict was already out the door.
"Wait!"
Violet yelled, dashing after him.
"I'm coming too!"
Benedict stopped short just before he reached the stairs.
"You are not coming," he ordered. "I will not have you exposed to..."
"Oh, please,"
Violet returned.
"I'm hardly a wilting flower, and I can vouch for Sophie's honesty and integrity."
"I'm coming too,"
Hyacinth said, skidding to a halt alongside Francesca, who had also followed them out into the upstairs hall.
"No,"
came the simultaneous reply from her mother and brother.
"But I said no,"
Violet said again, her voice sharp. Francesca let out a sullen snort.
"I suppose it would be fruitless for me to insist upon..."
"Don't even finish that sentence,"
Benedict warned.
"As if you would let me even try."
Benedict ignored her and turned to his mother.
"If you want to go, we leave immediately."
She nodded.
"Have the carriage brought round, and I'll be waiting out front."
10 minutes later, they were on their way. Chapter 22.
Such a scurry on Bruton Street. The Dowager Viscountess Bridgerton and her son Benedict Bridgerton were seen dashing out of her house Friday morning. Mr. Bridgerton practically threw his mother into a carriage, and they took off at breakneck speed.
Francesca and Hyacinth Bridgerton were seen standing in the doorway, and this author has it on the best authority that Francesca was heard to utter a very unladylike word. But the Bridgerton household was not the only one to see such excitement. The Penwoods also experienced a great deal of activity, culminating in a public row right on the front steps between the Countess and her daughter, Miss Posy Ryling. As this author has never liked Lady Penwood, she can only say, "Huzzah for Posy!" Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 16th of June, 1817. It was cold, really cold, and there was an awful scurrying noise that definitely belonged to a small four-legged creature, or even worse, a large four-legged creature. Or, to be more precise, a large version of a small four-legged creature. Rats.
"Oh, God," Sophie moaned.
She didn't often take the Lord's name in vain, but now seemed as good a time as any to start. Maybe he would hear, and maybe he would smite the rats. Yes, that would do very nicely. A big jolt of lightning, huge, of biblical proportions. It could hit the earth, spread little electrical tentacles around the globe, and sizzle all the rats dead. It was a lovely dream. Right up there were the ones in which she found herself living happily ever after as Mrs. Benedict Bridgerton. Sophie took a quick gasp as a sudden stab of pain pierced her heart. Of the two dreams, she feared that the genocide of the rats might be the more likely to come true. She was on her own now, well and truly on her own. She didn't know why this was so upsetting. In all truth, she'd always been on her own. Not since her grandmother had deposited her on the front steps of Penwood Park had she had a champion, someone who put her interests above, or even at the same level, as their own. Her stomach growled, reminding her that she could add hunger to her growing list of miseries. And thirst. They hadn't even brought her so much as a sip of water. She was starting to have very strange fantasies about tea. Sophie let out a long, slow breath, trying to remember to breathe through her mouth when it came time to inhale. The stench was overwhelming. She'd been given a crude chamber pot to use for her bodily functions, but so far she'd been holding it in, trying to relieve herself with as little frequency as possible. The chamber pot had been emptied before it had been tossed into her cell, but it hadn't been cleaned. And in fact, when Sophie had picked it up, it had been wet, causing her to drop it immediately as her entire body shuddered with revulsion. She had, of course, emptied many chamber pots in her time, but the people she'd worked for had generally managed to hit their mark, so to speak. Not to mention that Sophie had always been able to wash her hands afterward. Now, in addition to the cold and the hunger, she didn't feel clean in her own skin. It was a horrible sensation.
"You have a visitor."
Sophie jumped to her feet at the warden's gruff, unfriendly voice. Could Benedict have found out where she was? Would he even wish to come to her aid? Did he... Well, well, well. Araminta. Sophie's heart sank.
"Sophie Beckett," she clucked,
approaching the cell and then holding a handkerchief to her nose, as if Sophie were the sole cause of the stench.
"I would never have guessed that you would have the audacity to show your face in London."
Sophie clamped her mouth together in a mutinous line. She knew that Araminta wanted to get a rise out of her, and she refused to give her the satisfaction.
"Things aren't going well for you, I'm afraid," Araminta continued, shaking her head in a parody of sympathy.
She leaned forward and whispered,
"The magistrate doesn't take very kindly to thieves."
Sophie crossed her arms and stared stubbornly at the wall. If she so much as looked at Araminta, she probably wouldn't be able to restrain herself from lunging at her, and the metal bars of her cell were likely to do serious damage to her face.
"The shoe clips were bad enough," Araminta said, tapping her chin with her forefinger. "But he grew so very angry when I informed him of the theft of my wedding ring."
"I didn't!"
Sophie caught herself before she yelled any more. That was exactly what Araminta wanted.
"Didn't you?"
she returned, smiling slyly. She waggled her fingers in the air. I don't appear to be wearing it, and it's your word against mine. Sophie's lips parted, but not a sound emerged. Araminta was right, and no judge would take her word over the Countess of Penwood's. Araminta smiled slightly, her expression vaguely feline. The man in front, I think he said he was the warden, said you're not likely to be hanged, so you needn't worry on that score. Transportation is a much more likely outcome. Sophie almost laughed. Just the day before, she'd been considering emigrating to America. Now it seemed she'd be leaving for certain, except her destination would be Australia, and she'd be in chains. I'll plead for clemency on your behalf, Araminta said. I don't want you killed, only gone. A model of Christian charity, Sophie muttered. I'm sure the justice will be touched. Araminta brushed her fingers against her temple, idly pushing back her hair. Won't he, though? She looked directly at Sophie and smiled. It was a hard and hollow expression. And suddenly Sophie had to know. Why do you hate me? She whispered. Araminta did nothing but stare at her for a moment, and then she whispered, Because he loved you. Sophie was stunned into silence. Araminta's eyes grew impossibly brittle. I will never forgive him for that. Sophie shook her head in disbelief.
He never loved me.
He clothed you. He fed you. Araminta's mouth tightened. He forced me to live with you.
That wasn't love, Sophie said. That was guilt. If he loved me, he wouldn't have left me with you. He wasn't stupid. He had to have known how much you hated me. If he loved me, he wouldn't have forgotten me in his will. If he loved me...
She broke off, choking on her own voice. Araminta crossed her arms.
If he loved me, Sophie continued, he might have taken the time to talk to me. He might have asked me how my day went, or what I was studying, or did I enjoy my breakfast.
She swallowed convulsively, turning away. It was too hard to look at Araminta just then.
He never loved me,
she said quietly.
He didn't know how to love.
No words passed between the two women for many moments, and then Araminta said,
He was punishing me.
Slowly, Sophie turned back around.
For not giving him an heir.
Araminta's hands began to shake. He hated me for that. Sophie didn't know what to say. She didn't know if there was anything to say. After a long moment, Araminta said,
At first I hated you because you were an insult to me. No woman should have to shelter her husband's bastard.
Sophie said nothing.
But then...
To Sophie's great surprise, Araminta sagged against the wall, as if the memories were sucking away her very strength. But then it changed. Araminta finally said,
How could he have had you with some whore, and I could not give him a child?
There seemed little point in Sophie's defending her mother.
I didn't just hate you, you know, Araminta whispered. I hated seeing you.
Somehow, that didn't surprise Sophie.
I hated hearing your voice. I hated the fact that your eyes were his. I hated knowing that you were in my house.
It was my house, too,
Sophie said quietly.
Yes, Araminta replied. I know. I hated that, too.
Sophie turned quite sharply, looking Araminta in the eye.
Why are you here? She asked. Haven't you done enough? You've already insured my transportation to Australia.
Araminta shrugged.
I can't seem to stay away. There's something so lovely about seeing you in jail. I shall have to bathe for 3 hours straight to rid myself of the stench. But it's worth it.
Then excuse me if I go sit in the corner and pretend to read a book,
Sophie spat out.
There is nothing lovely about seeing you.
She marched over to the wobbly three-legged stool that was her cell's only piece of furniture and sat down, trying not to look as miserable as she felt. Araminta had bested her, it was true, but her spirit had not been broken, and she refused to let Araminta think otherwise. She sat, arms crossed, her back to the cell opening, listening for signs that Araminta was leaving. But Araminta stayed. Finally, after about 10 minutes of this nonsense, Sophie jumped to her feet and yelled,
"Would you go?"
Araminta cocked her head slightly to the side. "I'm thinking." Sophie would have asked, "About what?" But she was rather afraid of the answer. "I wonder what it is like in Australia," Araminta mused. "I've never been, of course. No civilized person of my acquaintance would even consider it. But I hear it is dreadfully warm. And you, with your fair skin, that lovely complexion of yours isn't likely to survive the hot sun. In fact..." But whatever Araminta had been about to say was cut off, thankfully, because Sophie feared she might be moved to attempt murder if she had to listen to another word, by a commotion erupting around the corner. "What the devil?" Araminta said, taking a few steps back and craning her neck for a better view. And then Sophie heard a very familiar voice.
"Benedict,"
she whispered.
"What did you say?"
Araminta demanded. But Sophie had already jumped to her feet and had her face pressed up against the bars of her cell.
"I said," Benedict boomed, "let us pass."
"Benedict!"
Sophie yelled. She forgot that she didn't particularly want the Bridgertons to see her in such demeaning surroundings. She forgot that she had no future with him. All she could think was that he had come for her, and he was here. If Sophie could have fit her head through the bars, she would have. A rather sickening smack, obviously that of flesh against bone, echoed through the air, followed by a duller thud, most probably that of body against floor. Running steps, and then,
"Benedict!"
"Sophie, my God, are you well?" His hands reached through the bars, cupping her cheeks. His lips found hers. The kiss was not one of passion, but of terror and relief.
"Mr. Bridgerton!"
Araminta squeaked. Sophie somehow managed to pull her eyes off of Benedict and onto Araminta's shocked face. In the flurry of excitement, she'd quite forgotten that Araminta was still unaware of her ties to the Bridgerton family. It was one of life's most perfect moments. Maybe it meant she was a shallow person. Maybe it meant that she didn't have her priorities in the proper order. But Sophie just loved that Araminta, for whom position and power were everything, had just witnessed Sophie being kissed by one of London's most eligible bachelors. Of course, Sophie was also rather glad to see Benedict. Benedict pulled away, his reluctant hands trailing lightly across Sophie's face as he drew back out of her cell. As he crossed his arms, he gave Araminta a glare that Sophie was convinced would scorch earth.
"What are your charges against her?"
Benedict demanded. Sophie's feelings for Araminta could best be categorized as extreme dislike, but even so, she never would have described the older woman as stupid. She was now, however, prepared to reassess that judgment, because Araminta, instead of quaking and cowering as any sane person might do under such fire, instead planted her hands on her hips and belted out,
"Theft!"
At that very moment, Lady Bridgerton came scurrying around the corner.
"I can't believe Sophie would do any such thing," she said, rushing to her son's side.
Her eyes narrowed as she regarded Araminta.
"And," she added rather peevishly, "I never liked you, Lady Penwood."
Araminta drew back and planted an affronted hand on her chest.
"This is not about me," she huffed. "It is about that girl,"
said with a scathing glance toward Sophie,
"who had the audacity to steal my wedding band." "I never stole your wedding band, and you know it,"
Sophie protested.
"The last thing I would want of yours." "You stole my shoe clips."
Sophie's mouth shut into a belligerent line.
"Ha! See?"
Araminta looked about, trying to gauge how many people had seen.
"A clear admission of guilt."
"She is your stepdaughter,"
Benedict ground out.
She should never have been in a position where she felt she had to...
Araminta's face twisted and grew red.
Don't you ever, she warned,
call her my stepdaughter. She is nothing to me. Nothing.
I beg your pardon, Lady Bridgerton said in a remarkably polite voice. But if she truly meant